Imagine looking at this 25-person startup where the CTO just casually mentions that 99% of their code is now written entirely by artificial intelligence.
Right, which is just a wild claim.
It really is. I mean, they say a brand new software feature is dreamed up at 10 a.m., it gets coded, deployed, and A/B tested on live users by noon.
Wow.
Yeah, and then based on that data, half of it just gets killed off by 3 p.m., and a totally rewritten, optimized version is deployed by 5 p.m.
That is, I mean, that's incredibly fast.
The massive engineering cycle that used to take, you know, a solid 6 weeks, fully completed between your morning coffee and your evening commute home.
For anyone listening who works in tech, or frankly, anyone who manages complex multi-step projects, those timelines sound like absolute science fiction.
Oh, totally.
But I would strongly advise treating those specific numbers, like the 99% metric, the same day rewrites from this startup, a company called Creo, as exactly what they are.
Which is what?
Exactly. It's self-reported marketing. Nobody outside the company has audited their code base or, you know, their internal deploy logs.
Right. So we take it with a grain of salt.
You have to discount that accordingly, yeah. But the fascinating part of their story, however, isn't actually that 99% metric at all.
No, the real hook is a profound observation from Creo's CEO about a trap the entire industry has kind of fallen into.
Yes.
He argues that the way almost everyone, from amateur coders to Fortune 500 executives, is using AI right now, has a hard, invisible ceiling. We are blinding ourselves to our own limitations.
He points out that if humans are merely operating AI tools step by step, our productivity will, well, eventually hit a brick wall.
Because we're the ones driving it.
Right. If a human is still the only entity manually building and clicking through these tools, the actual revolution in work hasn't even really begun.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is the mission for our deep dive today.
I love that.
We're going to explore why using AI merely as a fast tool puts a hard ceiling on your productivity. And how shifting to an AI as a system mindset can completely rewrite the rules of your daily work.
It's a huge paradigm shift.
It is. So to understand how to break productivity records, we first have to understand why most people hit that wall. Let's talk about the tool trap.
Yeah, think about the daily workflow of the average person using AI today. They basically treat it like a highly advanced hammer.
A very smart hammer, but still a hammer.
Exactly. It is autocomplete for a block of code, or maybe a quick first draft for a quarterly marketing document. Output absolutely goes up.
Oh, for sure. Everyone feels like they suddenly grew an extra arm and can work twice as fast.
Right. But the underlying logic of a tool is that it remains inherently limited by the user holding it.
Right.
A human identifies a task, kicks it off. The AI speeds up that one specific task. The human takes the output, finishes the job, and then critically, the human has to manually kick off the next task in the sequence.
So you are still strictly constrained by a 24-hour day. No matter how fast your AI tool generates text or code, every single task still has to pass through your physical hands and your brain.
Yeah.
It's like giving a traditional carpenter a laser-guided, highly motorized saw.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. Like, they're going to cut wood much faster than they did with a handsaw. But their total daily output is still firmly capped by how fast their own two hands can physically move the wood across the table.
That visual captures the bottleneck perfectly. Creo actually estimates that this specific tool user mode hits a hard speed ceiling at about a 10x improvement.
Just 10x?
Well, yeah. Once you're moving 10 times faster than you used to, you simply run out of hours in the day to click generate, read the immediate output, and, you know, set up the next prompt.
You just run out of time.
Right. The friction of the human interface becomes the limiting factor.
I have to push back on this a little bit, though.
Sure, do it.
If I'm listening to this on my commute right now, and I hear that I can get a 10x speed up in my daily work, my first thought is going to be that 10x is absolutely incredible.
It sounds pretty great, yeah.
Right. Why isn't that enough? Being 10 times faster than my peers is a career-defining boost.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the people who are truly escaping this trap aren't just trying to squeeze more output from their 24 hours.
What do they do with them?
They have stopped racing the clock entirely. Returning to your carpenter analogy, a 10x speed up is still just a very, very fast carpenter standing at a single workbench.
Okay, yeah.
People who break the 10x ceiling have stepped away from the bench entirely. They are now managing the entire factory floor.
Oh, wow.
They're looking at final results and setting strategic direction while multiple autonomous AI agents work simultaneously across different stations.
So they aren't just a faster user of a tool.
No, they are orchestrating an entire system.
So if a 10x carpenter is still just a person at a bench, what does this metaphorical factory floor actually look like in practice?
Well, that's a big
Are
question.
we talking about like a team of human managers overseeing AI, or is it software managing other software?
This brings us to a crucial engineering concept called harness engineering.
Harness engineering.
Yes, understanding this is vital because the hardest part of building this factory floor isn't actually the AI model itself.
Wait, I have to stop you there because that sounds completely backwards to me.
Really? How so?
If we're replacing human execution with AI execution, the AI's intelligence has to be the most important part of the equation, right? How can the structure around it be more important than the digital brain doing the actual work?
It's because the underlying AI models, while incredibly powerful, are raw, highly unpredictable, and prone to hallucinations.
They make things up.
Exactly. They don't have an internal compass for objective truth. They basically just predict the most likely next word.
Right, it's just math.
Right. So a harness in software engineering borrows its name from the physical tack you strap onto a horse to, steer it and restrain it.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Harness engineering is about building a sane, reliable, automated environment around a moving, unpredictable core.
So walk me through how that actually works. What does a software harness physically do?
A harness operates as an automated feedback loop. Let's say you ask an AI to write a complex script.
Okay.
Instead of the AI spitting the code out onto your screen for you to manually test, the harness catches the code.
It intercepts it.
Yes, it automatically drops that code into a safe, isolated testing environment, a sandbox. It attempts to run the code.
And then what?
When the code inevitably fails and produces a syntax error, the harness reads that error message, feeds it back into the AI as a brand new prompt saying, "This failed, here is the error, fix it," and the AI tries again.
So it's talking to itself.
Essentially, yes, this loop can happen 10 or 20 times in seconds, completely autonomously, before a human ever even sees the final working result.
So the system forces the AI to check its own work against reality.
Exactly that. And the evidence for how powerful this is comes from a fascinating experiment run by a company called LangChain.
What do they do?
They held an AI model completely fixed. They didn't upgrade the model. They didn't make the AI smarter in any way. They only changed the harness, the automated testing loop around it.
Okay, and the results.
By doing that, that same AI agent score on Terminal Bench, which is a standardized test measuring an agent's ability to solve real-world coding problems, jumped nearly 14 points from 52.8% to 66.5%.
Wait, really? Nearly 14 points of pure improvement with the exact same AI model.
The exact same one.
Just from giving it a better structural workspace to iterate within, that is
It
wild.
gets better. OpenAI saw a massive internal success using this exact philosophy. They published an engineering post detailing how they stood up a 1 million line software product.
A million
A
lines.
million lines. This product had 1,500 pull requests. Those are the digital packages of code that are submitted and waiting for approval to be merged into the main project.
Right.
This million-line product was driven by just three human engineers over 5 months.
Three engineers managing a million lines of code in 5 months. That ratio is absurd.
The kicker is that there was zero handwritten code from those humans.
Zero.
Zero. They solely steered an AI model called Codex. Their main takeaway was a brilliant distillation of the system era. Humans steer, agents execute.
Humans steer, agents execute.
Exactly. The hard part wasn't getting the agent to write code, it was building the systemic layer wrapped around it to make itself heal, test its own logic, and iterate without human handholding.
You know, if the AI and the harness are doing all of the executing, the role of the listener, the human sitting at the desk, shifts dramatically.
Very much so.
You are no longer the one doing the typing. Your job retreats to basically just two things: giving the high-level intent at the beginning and reviewing the output at the very end.
But that transition from creator to reviewer is significantly harder than it sounds.
Why is that?
Andrej Karpathy, a prominent AI researcher, laid out the bottleneck clearly. He noted that even if an AI generation loop can spit out 10,000 lines of code instantly, he, the human, remains the bottleneck.
Because he still has to read it.
Right. He has to verify that those 10,000 lines didn't introduce any hidden bugs, that there are no obscure security holes, and that it actually achieves the original intent.
So the output is fast, but the checking is slow.
The generation loop is nearly instantaneous now. The verification loop, however, is entirely dependent on heavy human cognition.
So the bottleneck didn't disappear, it just shifted from my typing fingers to my prefrontal cortex.
Yes, beautifully said.
Ethan Mollick, who studies AI in the workplace, echoes this sentiment too. He argues that the defining skill in this new era isn't even prompting anymore.
Prompting is just a temporary phase.
Exactly. The real skill is delegation. It's the ability to set strict constraints, hand over the material to a system, and expertly verify the results.
The most striking perspective on this specific shift comes from Creo's CTO. He happens to have a PhD in physics.
Okay.
He noted that the most useful thing his PhD program taught him wasn't how to write complex code. It was how to rigorously question assumptions, stress test arguments, and actively hunt for what is missing in a data set.
Being critical.
Right. His verdict is that the ability to criticize AI will soon be worth exponentially more than the ability to produce code.
That is a huge shift in value.
Anthropic, another major AI lab, talks about this behavioral quirk too. They have a specific term for when an AI agent fails a task. They call it declaring victory early.
Meaning the AI comes back, gives you a digital smile, and tells you it totally finished the job, but it actually skipped steps or hallucinated the outcome.
Exactly. It doesn't know what done actually means.
It only knows what the text of a completed job looks like. It lacks an internal model of true completion.
Yes, exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because if our only job is reviewing output and catching early victories, it sounds pretty relaxing at first glance. You just sit back with a coffee and read.
Right, sounds like a dream.
But it is actually creating a hidden crisis in the workplace. We are hitting a point where human review is absolutely buckling under the sheer weight of infinite AI
There's so
generation.
much content.
Right. The water is pouring into the sink faster and faster, but the drain didn't get any wider.
That analogy perfectly captures the cognitive load crisis. The data we have on this is alarming.
Lay it on me.
Ferris AI tracked the workflows of over 10,000 software developers. They found that teams leaning heavily on AI did finish about 21% more tasks.
Which sounds good initially.
But the hidden costs were devastating. The size of individual pull requests, the massive chunks of generated code that human developers are required to read and approve, grew by 154%.
Wow. So the AI isn't just writing more code, it's dumping massive, sprawling blocks of untested logic onto the human reviewer's desk all at once.
And because humans still read at the exact same speed they did 100 years ago, the median review time for those code blocks shot up 91%.
91%.
Yeah, and when Ferris followed up in 2026, that median review time had exploded to a staggering 441% increase.
441%.
Yes, actual delivery speed for the entire project barely moved. You generate the code instantly, but then it just sits in a human review queue for days. You are just moving the traffic jam further down the highway.
It's not just a speed issue either, it's a massive safety issue. Let's look at the data from Veracode.
Oh, the security data.
Yeah, they ran 80 coding tasks across over 100 different AI models. Nearly half the code generated completely failed basic security tests.
Half of it.
Yes, and for Java, the failure rate was an abysmal 72%.
Yeah.
I need you to explain why this happens. If these models are getting smarter and the code they write is getting cleaner and more syntactically correct, why are they still failing basic security protocols?
What's fascinating here is the underlying architecture of large language models.
Okay.
LLMs are fundamentally predictive text engines. They are not logical reasoning engines.
Right, we mentioned that earlier.
They are trained to predict what the most statistically likely next word or line of code should be based on billions of examples they've ingested. So they know exactly what secure professional code looks like stylistically.
It looks the part.
Right. They write code that is visually gorgeous and syntactically perfect. But actual digital security requires anticipating edge cases, understanding malicious logic, and seeing how a hacker might exploit a hidden pathway.
Which takes actual reasoning.
Exactly. The AI doesn't understand logic pathways, it just mimics patterns. To use a physical analogy, the AI paints a beautiful, highly realistic door, but it completely forgets to install a functional deadbolt.
That makes total sense. They are mimicking the form of security without the function.
Exactly.
And that brings us to what I think is the most revealing study on this entire dynamic. METR ran a randomized controlled trial with 16 senior developers doing real complex software work.
This study is wild.
It really is. Half used AI, half didn't. The developers using AI were actually 19% slower than the ones doing the work entirely by hand.
The performance drop is interesting, but the perception gap is the real story.
Wait, Amy.
Despite being 19% slower on the stopwatch, those same developers predicted beforehand that the AI would make them 24% faster.
Okay, so they thought it would help.
But even more wildly, after the task was over, they still believed they had been 20% faster.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
How can a seasoned professional's gut feeling about their own daily work be that completely disconnected from reality?
Yeah.
How do you feel 20% faster when you are actually 19% slower?
It comes down to human neurochemistry. Generation feels incredibly productive.
Okay.
When you hit a button and your screen instantly fills with 500 lines of complex code, your brain registers that visual as work being accomplished.
It feels like progress.
Right. It floods your system with dopamine, mimicking the exact feeling of having just typed those 500 lines yourself. It feels like you have superpowers. What your brain doesn't track intuitively is the slow, metabolically expensive, grueling cognitive load required by your prefrontal cortex to meticulously read through those 500 generated lines just to find the one hallucinated error that breaks the entire application.
So you're exhausted, but you don't connect it to the AI.
Exactly. The feeling of productivity totally detaches from actual productivity. Now, for full context, a follow-up METR study did show that returning developers, people who had time to adjust to the system and learn how to delegate, eventually did get faster.
Okay, so it's a learning curve.
Yes. The takeaway isn't that AI makes you permanently slow. The takeaway is that your internal compass for productivity is currently lying to you.
So if the verification gate is drowning and our own perception of our speed is deeply flawed, how are actual companies handling this transition?
That is the million-dollar question.
This moves us from the individual listener's desk to the organizational level. How do you tell a real AI-first organization from a fake one?
It comes down to how they handle the human labor that gets freed up. Shopify provides a brilliant example of a real AI-first culture.
What do they do?
Their CEO sent an internal memo requiring engineering teams to definitively prove that AI cannot do a job before they are allowed to add any newer human headcount to a project.
Which, on the surface, sounds like a ruthless mandate to cut jobs and fire people.
You would naturally assume that. But they didn't do layoffs. Instead, they massively expanded their intern program, going from 75 interns to a target of 1,000.
Wait, interns? That makes zero sense. They have the least amount of institutional knowledge and the least experience in the building. Why would you give the absolute beginners the keys to your AI systems?
Because they found that interns don't have a decade of legacy coding habits to unlearn.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Senior developers have deep muscle memory. They are used to writing line by line, so they naturally treat AI as a fancy autocomplete tool for their own typing.
They fall straight into the tool trap we talked about.
Exactly. Interns don't have that muscle memory. They naturally treat the AI the way a manager treats an employee.
Like a delegator.
Yes. They don't try to write with it. They just say, build me this application, and they immediately step into the role of delegator and reviewer. They are far more aggressive and creative users of the system because they aren't bogged down by the craft of the past.
That is a brilliant psychological insight. They skip the bench and go straight to the factory floor.
IBM's another prime example of a real rebuild. They deployed AI systems to automate 94% of their routine HR work.
94%?
Yeah. And because of that automation, they were able to cut roughly 200 roles in that specific department. But their total company headcount actually went up.
Why would it go up?
Because they took the estimated $3.5 billion in productivity savings and reinvested every dime straight into hiring for engineering and sales.
Oh, wow.
They used AI to clear the low-level brush and then moved their human capital to plant taller trees. That is real AI-first design.
Okay, so what does the fake AI-first organization look like then?
Fake AI first uses the technology as a flimsy excuse for immediate cost-cutting. Klarna is routinely cited as the cautionary tale here.
Oh, I remember this.
They deployed an AI support bot and loudly bragged to the press about how it was doing the work of hundreds of human customer service agents, saving them tens of millions of dollars.
I remember those headlines. It set off a wave of panic about the death of support jobs.
But look at the reality 2 years down the line. The CEO had to publicly admit that reducing headcount had become their sole evaluation metric.
Yikes.
Because they fired the humans rather than shifting them to manage the bot or handle complex escalations, the actual quality of their customer service completely collapsed.
Of course it did. There was no one verifying the output.
Exactly. They eventually had to bring humans back into the loop to fix the structural mess. Forrester Research called their approach the poster child for bad AI deployment.
Because they treated AI as a cheap replacement for the carpenter, instead of building a system that elevated their carpenters into factory managers.
And this isn't an isolated incident. Gartner predicts that by 2027, half of all the companies that conducted AI-driven layoffs will actually be forced to rehire.
Half of them.
Yes. And the irony is, they will be rehiring people at a premium specifically to manage, verify, and fix the AI systems that were supposed to replace them.
That is quite the backfire.
It really is. Real AI first redesigns the workflow and reinvests. Fake AI first cuts costs, watches the quality of their product collapse, and then pays a massive premium later to patch the holes.
So what does this all mean? If we look at everything you've unpacked today, the 10x ceiling of the tool trap, the necessity of harness engineering, the drowning review gates where human cognition is the bottleneck, and these massive corporate shifts, It really boils down to a fundamental change in what makes human labor valuable.
It does.
The tool era we are leaving behind tested how fast your hands were. Could you type faster, draft quicker, code better than the person next to you? But the system era we are entering tests something entirely different. It tests whether you can still tell what is actually right.
That is the core shift for the listener to absorb. The pure mechanical craft of generating something is depreciating in value because generation is nearly free and instantaneous.
Wow.
But judgment, the ability to verify, to set strict constraints, to catch the subtle hallucination, is appreciating in value rapidly.
Your irreplaceable value to your team or your company is being the one person in a room full of AI agents proudly declaring early victory who has the critical eye to look at the work and say, "No, that's not right. Go back and fix it."
This raises an important question, though, and perhaps something for you to mull over after we finish today.
What's that?
If the ultimate human skill in the modern economy is now judging what is right and catching complex mistakes, how will the next generation of absolute beginners ever develop that expert judgment?
Well, that's a good point.
If AI is doing all of the foundational generation work for them from day one, how do they get the thousands of hours of repetition required to intuitively know what a good job even looks like?
That is a terrifying and brilliant question to leave on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. As you head back to your desk or your commute, look at your own daily workflow and ask yourself the big question: am I just swinging a faster tool, or am I building a system?